Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Getting Hammered. I'm your host, Mary Catherine Hamm. I am here with my co-host, Vic Mattis of the Washington Free Beacon. There's a lot going on. We got some State of the Union updates. We have some Oscar news. We have some royal news that I want to get into. But before we do all that, let me also say we are remote today and will be remote this week because I am off to Israel. So I will keep you posted on that trip. I don't have anything to tell yet because have I packed? Am I ready? No, none of those things. But I will be by tomorrow morning. In the meantime, how's it going, Vic?
Hello, Mary Catherine. It's going fine, although I'm sad that we are remote and not in person together because I made another batch of Long Island iced teas for you at this lovely hour. I'm sure you'd enjoy it right now along with your chitza for breakfast.
Who doesn't love a morning iced tea? And it's always a Long Island iced tea.
Yes. How did you, recover fine from that?
Everything? Oh, yeah.
You feel, yeah? Because I get, you know, you're mixing, what, 4 or 5 different spirits. It can be a little dicey.
If I had had another one, it would have gone badly.
Yeah. Yeah, Kate and I were out with some friends on a Saturday night, and we were at a Greek restaurant and got a little carried away, and I got conned into drinking ouzo.
Oh.
On the rocks. Because of this cloudy look. That gave me weird dreams. So it's not absinthe, but at the same time, when you introduce like a new spirit or something that you haven't had in a while, it's unpredictable. So just, you know what? It's a public service announcement for our listeners. Beware.
Do you know what I made at home this week?
Ooh, what did you make?
I don't often make a decent cocktail at home, but sometimes I'll try.
Can't imagine.
So what I made this time was, because it's fairly simple, and I had all the ingredients, is a French 75.
Oh.
But I added a little Saint-Germain. So it was a Saint-Germain French 75.
It must have had a wonderful glow, golden hue.
It was awesome. So that's a champagne, gin, lemon juice, and lemon a little juice. Bit of Saint-Germain, which is elderflower liqueur.
That's right. I think, you know, the key to the French 75 is the willingness to pop open a bottle of champagne or sparkling wine or whatever.
Yes. I had a friend over and I had a bottle of champagne sitting around and I was like, you know what? Worth it. Let's open it up.
And then take it to the next level.
Yes. It was a bottle of Veuve too. So it was like,
you're kidding me.
The good stuff.
Wow.
Decent stuff, right?
Very fancy.
Yeah. Do you know that it was a gift from somebody? I'm not sure who. So thank you for
the widow. The widow Clicquot.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to say, did you know that it is the widow Clicquot?
Of course.
I've read a book about her because she was quite a character who managed to keep that business up and running after the death of her husband.
It's an excellent book. And her, Matteo, I think is her name, Pilar Matteo, her agent's my agent. So she does all those kind of, she's wonderful. Stacey Glenn,
I love it.
Wonderful.
I thought you meant the actual widow Clicquot's agent was your agent. And I was like, I mean,
she's
it
old,
makes
but she's
some
not that
sense.
Old. No, please. Not the same age.
Yeah, The Widow Clicquot is that book if you are interested in it. Okay, so now that we've got our widow biographies taken care of.
Yes.
And our liquor.
Yeah, it's a good way to start.
Shall we talk about the Oscars? All of Hollywood put on a show for us.
Oh, they did.
In Tinseltown last night. I always forget the Oscars are happening until they're actually happening and my social media is like, oh, this is happening.
Well, and it started early. It was at 7 p.m. I assume it's like 8, but it's 7. So they had an early start.
I appreciate the earlier start. And I also appreciate the idea of our East Coast supremacy making them get all dressed up at 1 p.m.
Right.
Like, oh, dude, you need your lash. You need your full glam. At 1 p.m. because us, the little people over here.
It's nighttime for us now.
It's nighttime.
Yeah.
We can't be staying up till 3 a.m.
Although when they finish, you know, I mean, they're just getting started. The night is young.
This is true.
Yeah.
I found, let me just start with the most important thing. I found the red carpet looks such that I have perused to be not very interesting.
You mean the outfits?
Yes.
Okay.
Normally there's like a lot of, at least something wild to write home about. I found I liked America Ferrera's Barbie nod with a very sparkly pink dress, but it was a cool look. It was classy. I like Lupita, always looks amazing.
She's beautiful.
This ice blue sequin gown.
Yes, beautiful.
Billie Eilish quite underdressed, but you know, that's her jam.
Okay.
She was wearing like a kind of a schoolgirl outfit with some knee socks.
My wife and daughter enjoy watching the red carpet.
Yes.
Yes.
You don't have any particular thoughts?
No, I didn't. Although later I saw during the awards ceremony itself, I think it was Ariana Grande, and she was dressed in quite a giant. It was a lovely dress, but it was so poofy that she couldn't get close to the microphone because the dress is in the way.
It was the bubble yum dress.
Yeah. Oh,
it was pink and it was very floofy.
Yes, very floofy.
Very floofy.
Yeah. But I think largely elegant.
Yeah. No,
people,
the
women.
Jimmy Kimmel had a champagne tux on. It's a risk. I don't mind a risk.
Also, yeah. Well, and also,
maybe it might have been blush. It might have been rosé. Yeah. I don't know.
Emily Blunt's husband, from The Office.
Yes.
Jim.
Jim Krasinski.
John Krasinski, yeah.
John Krasinski. I called him Jim because that's his character's name.
In my mind, he was wearing a white tux, but I could be, maybe that's just in my imagination.
He was. He and his wife were a matched pair. She had a white dress on and he had a white tux on. Mm-hmm. And how dare you? He is not just her husband. He is an action star in his own right, Vic.
He was, is he Jack Ryan? Not Jack Reacher, Jack Ryan. Yeah,
no, he and Chris Pratt, really surprising arcs in their careers, from
comedy,
sort of schlubby guys to
definitely schlubby,
very sought after action heroes.
Yeah, they have potential. I sometimes wonder if it's easy to go from action to comedy or comedy to
I think comedy action. To action, because comedy, I think comedy is probably harder.
Yes. Yeah. With the exception of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Who is amazing.
He's
I think he just always was by nature. I'll tell you, I was sort of interested, in watching the Oscars until I saw just before it started, Vanessa Hudgens issuing the land acknowledgement.
Did Vanessa Hudgens do that?
Yes, in the beginning. And I'm like,
I love Vanessa Hudgens.
Thank you for letting us know that the Dolby Theater is where once, either tribal grounds, perhaps the ancient Indian burial ground, perhaps a reservation or a casino. Something was there before their time. Can I say that? That was a joke, but it was, sorry.
I actually do appreciate that what they're doing is, it's the ultimate liberal expression, which is we're going to say a few words about
to cover our asses.
About how the ultimate opulent parade of Western ridiculousness, decadence is going to happen on this hallowed ground.
Right.
And we need to respect that before we start our drunken parade of sequin laden millionaires.
It's, and I'm not too familiar with the Indians of that area of what is now Los Angeles, which is interesting in its own right. It's a shame though they didn't do it, in the East Coast, let's say, where the Narragansetts, where they could say, that this land was taken from the Narragansetts who were peacefully torturing their, enemies to death before we arrived.
I don't think that's in the land acknowledgement.
No, I don't think the Cahokia, the human sacrifice of the Cahokia.
I guess there was a sort of Native American focused film.
Well, of course, there was Killers of the Flower Moon, which is from a great book. I didn't see the movie because I didn't have 6 hours to spend in a theater for a Martin Scorsese movie. But
it's a lot. Yeah.
Sometimes I do, but not lately. But that was Killers of the Flower Moon. Yeah, written by David Grant, but that is definitely worth reading. So
yeah. Oh, I was going to say about Vanessa Hudgens, who I very much like. She is pregnant, and the red carpet was how that pregnancy was announced. She got married last year to a baseball player, and I follow her on Instagram because
it's quite the reveal.
I've liked her actually via my daughters. I knew who she was, but I watched her in High School Musical. And I just have enjoyed watching her grow up, and she does the silly Christmas movies on Netflix, and I just think she's delightful. And so
is she also No Murders in the Building?
No, that is Selena.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. They're young. They're both very cute, dark-haired starlets. You're
attractive.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Sorry.
But Vanessa
it's early. It's early.
Vanessa Hudgens is pregnant, and it was announced via red carpet walk.
Yeah.
And then what I appreciate about her, and I hope she doesn't let them get her down. Don't let the haters get you down, Vanessa. Mm-hmm. Her first post after her pregnancy announcement was her having a giant fancy sushi dinner with her friends. And of course, the entire comment section
Blew up. Oh my gosh, you get...
Because Sushi, even though the Japanese, it must be said,
I wonder,
all the pregnant ladies eat sushi all the time. It's not a problem unless you're eating something really high in mercury. So like, you're fine. Don't do swordfish. But other than that, so everyone in the comments decides that it's the most important thing on earth to ruin this woman's happy dinner by slamming her for trying to murder her child by eating a salmon roll. By the way, y'all don't even know what she ordered. She could have had miso soup. Shut your mouths.
She could have had donburi. We don't know.
Shrimp tempura.
Yakisoba.
Also, as I always say to everyone, Emily Oster is expecting better. Will allow you to have a pregnancy where you are not driven crazy by people like this, which is what I said in the comments before she shut the comments down.
Right. Sanity. Also, I hope she learned her lesson and next time she posts a picture of her that she's having a big ham sandwich.
Yes, please do. Do all of the things. Okay. I'll run through some winners real quick. Sure. Oppenheimer doing a lot of the big ones. Cillian Murphy, best actor for Oppenheimer.
Yes. Yeah.
Best picture, Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
I believe best director, Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer.
Yes.
Best supporting actor, Robert Downey Jr. He's always a charmer. Yeah. Oppenheimer. Best original score, Oppenheimer.
Wow. Seven, so I think, yeah.
Those are the big ones. Yes, go ahead.
Can I put in my 2 cents for Robert Downey Jr.?
Yes, please.
So,
I'm always open to more than 2 cents about Robert Downey Jr.
Very happy that he won his first, I think this has to be his first Oscar. Obviously didn't win it for, Iron Man or
right.
What's the zero? But his wonderful turn. One of the first movies I think I ever saw him in was Back to School, and he plays Jason's roommate. But he goes up on stage, and he's basically almost like a caricature of himself. His character is he's always him.
Yeah.
I think that's actually just him.
I think
and,
so.
You know, Kei Hui Kwan was so excited to give this award to Robert Downey Jr. If you watch the video, he just snatches it from him and he does his shtick. But he says something very interesting, which was, I'd like to, he mentions that this Oscar is due to his having an awful childhood or something to that effect. He had an awful childhood. His father was also an actor, a Robert Downey Sr., who you might actually, Kyle Smith was very good about reminding us, he has a bit part in the movie Boogie Nights, where he has this expression, it's a YP, not an MP. It's your problem, not my problem. And I've always quoted that, not realizing that that was his dad. The problem was, when they grew up, and Robert Downey Jr. talks about it, it was the worst possible time for these sort of California Hollywood hipster types who all thought it was cool not only to do drugs, but to give drugs to kids.
Yeah.
So he was maybe doing cocaine at age 8. And smoking pot when he was maybe 3, 4 with his dad. He was like, hey, let's get high together. And it's reminiscent of Joan Didion's Slouching Toward Bethlehem at the end when she sees this, these parents and the kids are on acid and it's just awful. And that was a time. And this happened to him. And, the spiral, was very serious for Robert Downey Jr. And, 25, 26 years ago, he was in jail or whatever, and with drug problem. So it's quite a comeback for him.
Quite a comeback. And I've always appreciated his comeback, and he speaks pretty frankly about it. He's also very happily married for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
To the same woman, which is, not the Hollywood way of doing things. So
she
appreciate
saved him.
That.
Yeah. He considers her to be like a vet, and he was like this dog, the sad dog that she nursed back to health.
Yeah, I appreciate that very much about him. He just seems like a charming, sweet person who cares about important things. And things, I don't mean whatever cause Hollywood has decided is important at the moment, but like actual important things.
Two things I loved about him, Mary Catherine. One is he made some comment that he immediately downplayed, but he had something to the effect of, you cannot come out of prison and not be conservative. Emerging from prison was one line, which is very interesting. And the other is this very touching video where he worked with a company that has developing prosthetics, like robotic prosthetics. And they brought in this little kid to have this new, activated prosthetic to be fitted on with him room. And you can find that on YouTube, and it's touching.
I saw two clips floating around. Again, this is how I watch award shows, by the way.
Yeah,
I just watch clips,
which
is bad news for the award shows, but this is how we do it now. But I saw two clips floating around, and you mentioned him sort of snubbing Michelle, is it? Oh, no, it was
Hugh Kwan when he grabs the award.
I'm going to mention Michelle Yeoh, who's the other star of that movie.
Yes.
Everything Everywhere All at Once. So there was a sense that he might have snubbed this actor. And then Emma Stone, who won for Poor Things as Best Actress, she came on stage and she sort of bypassed Michelle as well.
Right.
Okay. You might have different feelings about this, Vic.
I reckon.
Perhaps you've not been represented properly. No, but I do want to say, because this happened with Taylor Swift and Celine Dion also.
Oh.
When there were accusations that she snubbed Celine Dion by taking her award and then going on stage. Okay. I don't love this thing we do. That in this moment of like super high adrenaline, this thing that you, even if you're a narcissist on the level of a Hollywood star, might never have imagined you would be doing.
Right.
You're getting the most important award in your entire industry. And in that moment, if you do less than the exact courtesy to every single person on stage, you are a bad person. I don't like that.
The overanalyzing, because you're overwhelmed with the fact that you've won this award, so you're up on stage with everybody there, and it's a blur.
Well,
I'll give you that.
I checked the stage. There are like five or six people on stage for each presentation.
That was the new thing, by the way.
Yeah.
Right, where they brought in order to announce the nominees, they brought in previous winners of that award to introduce you. So I'm like, some of them seemed very personable. Like and personal, where they're looking at the actor directly, and the actor, the nominee, is so touched that, I can't believe that, you know, she or he is talking to me.
Right.
Nicolas Cage announcing Paul Giamatti as a nominee was great. And you could see Giamatti looking at him and he's like, they're connecting.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm with you all here. It's all heart, man. You know, the whole thing. And Ben Kingsley, by the way, likewise announcing to Cillian Murphy. I mean, what an honor. And then sometimes some of the other presenters, they were mostly just reading it. And you're like, did you see this movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, sometimes I'm amazed by the lack of charisma that you get out of something like the Oscars. Yeah. There are wonderful moments there, and you'll always have an RDJ or a Matthew McConaughey who seems like a real person.
Matthew McConaughey up there was fantastic too.
Yes,
of course.
But a lot of times it just falls so flat and you're like, gosh, these are the best performers we have.
Yeah.
They're like supposed to be everything. But yes, I would like to just like have a little bit of leeway for Emma Stone and RDJ because you know, if I were in that situation, I have pretty good social skills, but I'm not sure that I would greet properly five or six people.
Yes.
I don't know.
It's just interesting that they happen to be both Asian, Mary Catherine.
I was wondering if you would note that.
Yeah, Vic. You know, it's the first thing I think about. Okay.
do we think that's the issue?
You decide.
Oh, wait. I should run through a few more.
Please, I'm
so
sorry.
People can get the real news here.
Yes,
let's see.
Course.
Best original song was What Was I Made For from Barbie for Billie Eilish, which is actually a beautiful song. Best supporting actress was from The Holdovers, Divine Joy Randolph. Best animated feature, a little bit of a surprise. The Boy and the Heron beat out the Spider-Verse.
Oh, okay.
I love the Spider-Verse, but I haven't seen the other one. Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer, was the best international feature film.
Controversial.
Yes, we have a controversy about that speech, which we will get into. Are there any other big ones I'm missing? Oh, I liked best adapted screenplay was American Fiction.
Oh, that was the one with, that's with Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah, and Cord Jefferson was the writer and director. This one, I have not seen the movie yet, and I'm interested in it because the premise is quite interesting.
Yeah.
It's a 2023, that I'm reading from Wikipedia real quick, just so I can give you the gist. 2023 American comedy drama film written and directed by Cord Jefferson, based on a 2001 novel, Erasure, by Percival Everett. It follows a frustrated novelist professor who writes an outlandish satire of stereotypical black books, only for it to be mistaken by the liberal elite for serious literature and published to both high sales and critical praise. That is a premise
funny.
I would not necessarily expect would be rewarded in Hollywood or embraced by a guy who's, I'm sure, a liberal black director.
Yeah.
And then he gave a speech basically saying, hey, Hollywood, maybe you should do, instead of $200 million movies, you should do, you know, a handful of $20 million movies that have more interesting ideas in them.
Yeah.
And I like that idea for art.
Yeah. The problem with Hollywood, okay, I'm just stealing all this stuff from Sonny, But no, the problem with Hollywood is you have a
hat tip, Sonny.
Yeah, I'll say it's probably what I gleaned through osmosis from having been on the show for so long. But there's really two tiers of Hollywood budgets now. There's the $20 million or less horror flick that will make a lot of money and easily cover if it's good horror. And then there's the big budget. And the in-between movie, like the $60 million, $50 million, $60 million, $70 million film, boy, it's hard to, you know, get in there anymore. And there was a lot of great films that are in that weird category.
Now, is that the kind of thing that back in the day, because I do feel like this is sort of missing, back in the day would have been like a Dirty Rotten Scoundrels or Three Amigos, like those Steve Martin
I was going to say When Harry Met Sally, or you've got the rom-coms, you know, I mean, it doesn't cost that much. Most of it's salary, you know, and set, but the, you know, not a lot on the way in the way of special effects. But
yeah, I mean, that's a genre that is
everybody else gets pushed out.
Right.
Because they got to do either really big or something that's not going to cost them a lot. You know, how
if
much
I
they
ever
have
write
to pay
a movie,
for,
it will definitely be one of those cheap horror movies that makes a lot of money.
Right. Okay.
You're like, I know where to place my bet. Okay.
Mary Catherine, did you see the musical act with Ryan Gosling?
I did. I watched that.
What did you think?
One, I enjoy the nod to Marilyn Monroe. And
yes.
Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend.
I was going to say Madonna and Material Girl.
I guess it's both.
Which is, no, it really, I'm sure it's Marilyn Monroe, but it's the.
Yeah. Well, hers was a nod to Marilyn.
Yes.
So we're now on our second iteration. Yes. This is second wave Marilyn Monroe.
I have a question for you.
Satire. Yes.
Was there a nod to this where this is, we're talking about the video from Madonna and of course from the movie, I guess Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend.
Right.
Is that the movie or the song?
Yeah, I think so.
We're so knowledgeable. In that scene. With Marilyn Monroe and all the suitors, and it's
Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
I knew that. Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Was there a scene like that in Barbie?
I don't think so.
Okay. So this was really just for this performance.
Well, it wasn't stylized this way. So this was a nod, I think, to Hollywood.
I thought
it was
great.
You know, performances of the past. Look, Ryan Gosling's great.
Yeah.
He was fantastic in the movie.
Yeah. Extremely talented.
His character, I love Margot Robbie, but his character arc, his character himself, with apologies to feminism, was the better, more interesting half of the movie.
Yeah.
And watching him grow, learn, not grow, or learn was most of the fun of the film outside of the design and how everything looked. So I find it funny that they have this big to-do about how Barbie wasn't honored enough. And then the honoring that the spotlight Barbie does get is this performance by Ken.
I have to say.
But it's really good. It's charming. It's actually good. It's good entertainment.
So as you know, I did not watch the movie, the Barbie movie. And my wife and my daughter did and loved it. But I did not. I was in the other room. I hear the song and I'm thinking, it sounds pretty catchy. And I hear them laughing. And then I hear the voice. So I assumed it was from the Barbie movie.
Right.
And I said, that really sounds like Ryan Gosling's voice. And I know he's saying in La La Land. I thought he was so-so as a singer in that movie. But then I ended up walking over. And then I saw, you know, my double, Simu Liu.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I get mistaken for him all the time. You know, on the beach, especially on the beach.
Uh-huh.
And then I saw Slash from Guns N' Roses doing the guitar solo.
Dude, I was going to mention this. Like, what a move.
It was.
What a move.
So does that mean he plays the guitar solo in the song? Do we know that?
I don't think he did in the movie. I feel like I would have remembered Slash from the movie.
Right.
I think little Wolfie Van Halen was also there, who's not anymore. He's grown, but he was also playing.
Oh, was he playing the bass?
I think so.
Because I said, he's got to be somebody. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. It was a great performance. And I don't even know the movie, as you know. I mean, I get the gist of it. And I thought the song was catchy. I thought it was great. I thought it was I'm not usually one to watch these musical performances.
Right.
But I thought it was very well done.
I liked it too. And I don't hate on Barbie. Like, I didn't think that it was, you know, worth having a breakdown over the fact that it wasn't nominated for every single award.
Did you feel that Margot Robbie should have been nominated?
No. I think that Margot Robbie has done much more interesting and impressive work in other films.
Yeah.
Like, I, Tanya, I think.
Okay.
Wolves of Wall Street.
Oh, I liked her in that movie.
I'm sure you did. Much more interesting roles. She's lovely in this, but she's meant to play a character who's sort of a little surfacey, and then it gets a little deeper, but it's fine. She did a great job. It just wasn't like one of those meaty rolls.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's sort of a plastic roll.
All right.
In fact.
All right. I do. Yeah. I will say this before I forget. Another cute moment was Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito going to present an award. So it's a throwback to Twins. But for some reason, they don't mention Twins. Instead, they mention Batman. And they were in two different iterations of Batman. And then they said, well, you know, Batman's here in the audience. And then they must have told him ahead of time. And there's Michael Keaton, you know, and he has a series. And he's trying not to crack a smile.
Right.
And it's very hard, you can tell. But, you know, they're taunting him. And he's just like gesturing like, bring it on.
Yeah.
Bring it on. It was really quite, quite funny. And before we get into the serious aspect of this Oscar moment, two other things I wanted to bring up. One was, you know, we're waiting for the very last award to be presented is for Best Picture. And they don't do a thing with previous Best Picture winners. It's just Al Pacino walking on stage. And man, is he old, and he basically doesn't care anymore. He's just going to do his thing. Did you notice how he didn't even build up to the envelope?
He didn't do one-arm push-ups.
He did like Jack Palance. No,
Jack
I love
Palance.
That one. No, Jack Palance is great. He goes up there and he goes, and here we are, you know? And he's like, okay, the envelope. And he doesn't even say, and the winner is. He doesn't, or the nominees are. He just goes, oh, I guess we'll find out in this envelope. He says, he opens it and he goes, my eyes see Oppenheimer. And everyone's sort of like, what? And then like, I really hope this isn't a La La Land Moonlight moment.
Oh gosh,
you know,
please, no.
Where he messed up, and that was it.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was the weirdest delivery since Elizabeth Taylor sang Gladiator, you know?
You know what? You know what? They do what they want to do.
They do.
At least he's not running for president.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of, before we go, oh, that's
speaking
a, that,
of politics.
Again, yeah. I've got Jimmy Kimmel made a Trump joke, and I get it because Trump's truths on Truth Social are ridiculous.
Right.
But, you know, it's such a layup. It's such a sop. I mean, he's just playing to that crowd. It's so lame because then they're all yucking it up. Like, as if it's like edgy.
Yeah. Well, no, I actually thought a dramatic reading of a Trump truth, which is something that I enjoy doing myself, is comedy just in and of itself. Like you can't write it any better.
Yeah.
And I thought of all the Trump bashing you could do, I prefer one that's actually funny.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go there. There's no going there. They do this all the time. But I appreciate an attempt to actually be entertaining while you're talking about politics, which is ostensibly their job, the entertainment part.
Right.
So I liked that. Didn't have an issue with that joke. But yes, it's a very like, oh, we're all going to clap for you.
Yeah. I'll tell you who I really liked was John Mulaney.
Oh, I didn't see him.
And he just he was just presenting the award for best sound and ends up going on this ridiculous tangent. But, you know, you could tell that he's rehearsed this to make it just right. You know, he put a lot of effort into it.
Right.
And it was all about the ridiculousness of Kevin Costner's Field of Dreams and how... how the ghost world works about, you know, and Burt Lancaster. And he just goes on and on and on. It was great.
He's a very talented comic. That's the thing about these shows. Sometimes I don't understand. Like, I know Jimmy Kelly, was he a sketch comedian or was he also a stand-up?
I don't, maybe he's tried his hand at it, but I do know. I mean, obviously he was on The Man Show.
Yeah, I think that like stand-ups understand a room. They understand they understand working with a room.
Yeah.
They can turn on a dime in interesting ways. I just think that's often the better choice than like the actor crowd. That every time they have actual actors host the Oscars, doesn't go that well. Okay. So there were some signs of protest at the Oscars. And despite all of the news I've heard of the Zionist conspiracy owning Hollywood, the protests almost entirely went in the direction of not acknowledging that hostages are still kept in Israel, but accusations of genocide against Israel. And there were pins worn in solidarity with the people of Palestine, but not as often the other way around. Did you see any pro-Israel notes? Was there any of that?
No, that would have taken a lot of courage, I think. No,
yeah.
I mean, I could be wrong. So we're open to corrections, listeners.
You know what? We will fact check ourselves on this, but the most notable sort of protest speech came from Jonathan Glazer, who directed the film Zone of Interest that won for International Feature Film. It's a historical drama co-produced in UK and Poland. The story is loosely based on a 2014 novel by Martin Amis. it stars the German actors. Blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to look for the actual. Where's the nut graph, guys?
Okay, well, it takes place. It's the home of Rudolf Huss,
yes.
Who was the worst of the Rudolf Hesses. Rudolf Huss, worse than Rudolf Hess. I'm not saying they're both bad, okay? But if you know your Reich, if you know the Reich stuff,
right.
Some of us do, I can tell you, which is why Hess got like life in Nuremberg, and Huss, you know, was executed, I believe.
And the film is like
he was the camp. He ran the camp. He ran the Auschwitz camp. But it's
running
like,
Auschwitz. But it's sort of a picture of his idyllic, unaffected life.
Yeah. Insane.
Next door to all this horror, which is a very interesting premise for a movie. And and puts into the focus the lack of humanity required to, or the dehumanization required to sit right next to this happening and direct this happening and
the family
live this way.
Is there. I mean, again, so it's extremely, I would watch this movie having known the history of this and the awfulness again. And Huss was, you know, he was a monster, but they have this, you know, this goes back to Hannah Arendt's banality of evil. I mean, they just, you know, on the other hand, they're able to, you know, compartmentalize. So you're killing millions of people on one hand. And on the other hand, you're having this family life here and the garden and the pool and everything else. It's, you know, it's insane.
Wild. So for this Holocaust film, Jonathan Glazer wins and he goes up on stage and says, at least in part, he tells the room that he would like to refute his own Jewishness, quote, being hijacked in respect to the war in Gaza, and goes on to... We'll play a clip of this, but...
In the present, not to say look what they did then, rather look what we do now. Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October... Whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all are victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist?
There was no occupation of Gaza pre-October 7th or even post, by the way. It was more than a week before anyone was on the ground in Gaza. And to this date, it's not occupied.
They left in 2005, 2006. So, I mean, again, end the occupation. And these were rallies that were going on October 8th. So which occupation are we talking about? And we do this all the time on the show, but people continue to do this, Mary Catherine. So refuting his Jewishness.
And he says refuting his Jewishness being hijacked, which I don't know, but he's a writer, right? These are smart people. It's quite a phrase. And understandably, those who do not stand in solidarity with him, who are also Jewish, not refuting their Jewishness and saying it's not being hijacked. So
it's the, well, can't we just, at this point, look, you made your point. Let's just leave Hamas in place. Did somebody say there were hostages? Okay. Thank you.
It does seem like maybe shout out.
I mean, because this could all end. This could all end.
Nicole Lampert, writing for the Jewish Chronicle, says there is nothing Jew haters love more than the penitent who is willing to sell his own people down the river. She mad about this one. Mm-hmm. We saw it all over the weekend with the I'm Jewish and I'm marching with the pro-Hamas demonstrators chest beating. What they were saying is, I'm not like the other Jews. I'm a good Jew. And so there's no surprise that Zone of Interest director Jonathan Glazer should get a huge round of applause from Hollywood for telling them he refuted his own Jewishness being hijacked in respect to the war in Gaza. Look, again, people do have real disagreements with whatever government is in charge of Israel, right? And how a war might be prosecuted and all these things. But again, one must recognize that October 7th was an act of aggression against an entirely civilian target, not entirely. I guess there were some IDF soldiers there in the mix as well, but they were few and far between. And that there are still innocent men, women, and children held by a terrorist organization, Hamas, in Gaza, and this insane moral flipping people do in order to say, and by the way, the Biden administration has now moved to this position, which is, we have to have a ceasefire in order to get the hostages.
Right.
No, you agree to let the hostages go, and then you get ceasefires. That's how that works. We flipped it on its head in liberal America.
That's right, which is why Hamas has not agreed to any sort of a peace deal. Anything that involves giving back the people we took, mm-hmm. we took from those lands, from Israel, and are keeping, you know, men, women, children, civilians. No, that's not part of the ceasefire. So anything, you know, short of that would be a disaster for Israel. Hamas is now, the leadership, the command and control is down to, I think, Rafah. Yeah. Israel is really close to getting in there now. I don't think they're going to stop. My assumption is they're going to finish that job. And again, whoever is alive, they're going to, you know, get them out. And of course, they're not going to agree to keeping Hamas in power. It's just not an option.
You can't.
And these people, but it's all this moral equivalence. I mean, it just drives me nuts. So.
Well, yeah, the idea that you're sort of turning the Holocaust on its head and against the Jewish state.
A lot of people do that.
It's a wild thing to do.
Mm-hmm. In order to make it okay to hate Israel.
Right.
You know.
It says, this is the same writer, Nicole Lampert, just a few hours before Glazer went on stage, Hamas were putting out their own film. This one claimed that 4 more hostages were dead, including, ironically enough, a Polish-born Holocaust historian called Alex Danzig, who used to give tours to school children at Auschwitz, the scene of Glazer's film. And she notes that, as many of my more right-leaning or centrist Jewish friends have noted, like, these people's friendship only goes so far. Like, it doesn't matter how much you agree with them.
Right.
If they're on the side of Hamas, as many people seem to be, the issue isn't the policies.
Right.
That's not the issue.
No, I mean, we've gotten to the point where people are now seemingly comfortable siding with a terrorist organization.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Can I, just on the anti-Semitism update note, our friend A.G. Hamilton, is at A.G. Hamilton, pretty not 29, who I enjoy reading all the time. He notes there's a small publication, Guernica magazine, that printed an article from a very liberal Israeli translator regarding her experience pre and post 10/7. This translator spends her free time driving Palestinian kids to Israeli hospitals for life-saving treatments. She did this before 10/7 and has resumed doing so. The article talks about her reaching out to Palestinians she knew and her concern for the situation in Gaza. Yet because she is Israeli and because she is also outraged regarding Hamas butchering, raping, and torturing her neighbors on 10/7, a bunch of lowlifes at this publication resigned and forced the publication into ludicrously retracting the article, which you can read it. He links it. But the point he makes is that if this is not enough, if the person actively volunteering to help actual Palestinian children get treatment in Israeli hospitals, by the way, which is where they can get treatment.
Right.
If that person, simply by virtue of being Israeli, cannot write an op-ed or a piece in your magazine, your issue, again, is not with the policies.
Right. That's exactly right, Mary Catherine. It's these people who are resigning, right, to pat themselves on the back.
Right.
It's not because of what this Israeli woman, it's not what she said. It's not what she does. It's because of who she is.
It's who she is. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's enough to they would find it offensive. Guernica is a Spanish Civil War reference, right? It was a Picasso painting.
And oh, yeah. I knew that right off the top of my head. Yeah.
It's one thing I do because it was a site of a Luftwaffe, I believe it was a Luftwaffe bombing that flattened Guernica. So a lot of people were killed in that. So I assume this is a leftist publication.
Yeah, it would seem so. The resignations are the indicate that, yes, that is
true. I love some of the resignations, including the assistant to the publisher. And I'm like, is it the assistant publisher or the assistant to the publisher?
Somebody's grabbing copies. They're like,
I can't do this anymore. I mean, people are telling me, okay, this is kind of a tangent. I'm just going to go on a tangent.
Go for it.
People are telling me, oh, have you thought about, like, you know, I'm very happy where I love my job. But people are like, oh, could you mean, you know, working at X place or Y place doing this? Any of these other places in the mainstream, if I had to sit through like a DEI orientation like our friend Adam Rubinstein did in the Times, I would just, if not for the importance of health insurance, I mean, you know, I would just walk out and say, to heck with you, all of you. I'm just like, this is ridiculous. You people are insane. I'm leaving. As soon as you're snapping fingers or I have to provide my pronoun preferences, unless my name is Chris or Pat, I'm not doing it. You know, I can't do it. This is too much. Victorino might be questionable for some, but
you. Well, I was going to say you might get away with that as a person of color. Except Asians don't count anymore. They don't.
That's right. They don't.
Yeah. So
okay,
we'll see how you fare.
I can't work at these places.
Can we briefly get into a little royal?
Oh yeah, yeah, sure.
Controversy.
Sure.
Okay, so we haven't done this story on the show, I don't think, but no. I know that many of our listeners probably know that Kate Middleton has been out of the spotlight for some months now.
Yeah.
She had abdominal surgery, and it was announced at that time that she would be in the hospital for 2 weeks, which is a very long time.
Right.
And for any procedure, and that she would then be home recovering and would not be in public until Easter, which is the end of March. So a couple months of out of the limelight. During that time, William also had to eject from some other professional responsibilities to deal with, quote, a personal matter, which then made people think, oh my gosh, what's happening? At the time, though, a friend's husband had committed suicide. So that was also on his plate. So that may have been the personal matter that he was dealing with. Then there was a paparazzi photo last week run by TMZ of Kate Middleton driving in a car with her mom. It was fairly blurry. It wasn't run by any of the British press. It was only run by TMZ. Before this and after this, there were many conspiracy theories about Kate Middleton. People are very concerned about her, and they are convinced something weird is happening.
Can you at least share some of the speculation? This is strictly gossip and rumor. We're not talking about.
Yes.
So what are people
just
theorizing?
The examples.
What are theorizing?
So this one of the very silly ones is that she is getting a BBL, a Brazilian butt lift.
Okay. I'm sorry. But, I'm sorry we don't have video for this because my reaction, I just sort of had to go off the
But
side
people
of
are
the screen.
People are speculating about various plastic surgeries.
Okay.
People are speculating about a substance abuse problem that might have needed rehab.
Wow.
An eating disorder that might have caused some sort of issue that required surgery. Again, these are not at all real things that have been verified. But anyway, this is just what's floating around. People are alleging that the woman caught in the paparazzi photo was Pippa, not Kate. It's all a ruse.
Yeah, it's a ruse. Okay.
Now, on one hand, I sort of appreciate the Britishness of this, which is like in America, the American model is Katie Couric's going to get a colonoscopy and we're all going to watch it.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Everybody, we're up in your business, so to speak.
That's how we do things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
We share. We overshare. And then in Britain, it's like, no, we don't do that. And this is very much in the opposite direction, right?
Yeah.
And very much in the opposite direction of the mirror image, the Markle couple, Harry and Meghan, who share everything, right? So I kind of appreciate that this is like very quiet. On the other hand, like, well, we're worried about her too. Like, this is a long period of time to be sick.
I like her a lot.
Yeah. She is lovely.
Yeah.
Then this week, she and William's Instagram account, their official mouthpiece, releases a personal family photo for the British Mother's Day, which is, you know, on a different day than ours. Okay. So they release this photo and Kate Middleton is looking resplendent. She's seated, casually dressed with her three children all around her, draped over her. Everybody's smiling.
Happy family.
Everybody's having a good time. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is lovely. The word on the street is that William took the photo. It's released to the press. The British press runs with it. But then the British press pulls the photo, yanks this photo, gives a kill notice to photo agencies not to use it. Why? Because a bunch of Photoshop hawks, and actually you don't have to be that much of a Photoshop hawk to see it, noted that it had been manipulated, that there were weird blurry spots, there was a clone tool used, there were, you know. Honestly, like some of the deeper work, I'm like, I don't know. This just looks like a kid standing awkwardly. I don't know why that has to be fake.
Right.
There was stuff about Prince Louis's finger position. And it was, you could go down a real rabbit hole.
You know, Mary Catherine, I often accuse you of doing the same thing with your Christmas cards. I look carefully at it. I said, it's all staged.
That thing was all real. Actually, you know what? I'll tell you the truth and I'll tell you what I think happened here.
Okay.
So they pull the photo. So it's a big controversy now. Because now the conspiracy theorists are like, well, she's probably just like, it's like Paul McCartney. Like, she's gone. And we're just seeing a...
Right. She had a patch on her arm that said OPD, officially pronounced dead. Yeah, she was there. Okay.
Yeah. So that's what's happening is people are grasping onto this. And like, I got to say, a manipulated photo does make you say like, well, what the heck is happening here? The Duchess herself, is she Duchess now or is she Princess?
Princess.
Anyway.
Yeah, Princess of Wales.
Yeah, she's the princess. She says, like many amateur photographers, I do occasionally experiment with editing. I wanted to express my apologies for any confusion with the family photograph we shared yesterday. Any confusion the family photograph we shared yesterday caused. I hope everyone celebrating had a very happy Mother's Day. Catherine. Signed C. Signed C, which means it actually came from her. So that's what's happening there. And so let me say, I think the easiest explanation here probably is that they took a bunch of pictures in a row.
Uh-huh.
There are three kids.
Yep.
You're trying to get three kids to smile at the same time in a proper way. Lewis is notorious for not being very cooperative.
Yeah.
And I would bet, as many session photographers do for families, that different versions of kids were used to put together into one photo.
Okay.
And that it was not done expertly. If we're to believe the official story.
This is the most photo analysis people have done since Lee Harvey Oswald.
Getting Hammered investigates.
In the rifle and the shadows of where the rifle and then his chin shadow is going in different directions. It's that kind of analysis we're talking
about. And my point is, like, I have actually done this one time. I don't make a practice of it.
Oh, really?
But my Christmas card, the front picture is of the baby. And he looks like a million bucks.
Yeah, it's a great card.
That is a legit photo. Yeah. There was nothing messed with.
Yeah.
On the back of the Christmas card, I have all four children in a wagon. Now, for that one, I could not get all of them looking at me at the same time. The babies kept moving their heads. So I asked my dad, who's a better Photoshopper than Kate is, to put Cal's face onto him in the proper way from one of the other shots.
Should have asked him to do the thing for the royal family.
So it's a combo shot, right?
Very interesting.
Now, for a Christmas card, I don't think this needs to be disclosed, although feel free to use this as my Oppo research political adversaries.
Sorry, that was my snort, by the way.
But when you are this sort of like strange embodiment of the state, and you're taxpayer funded and people are concerned about you and you're putting out what's basically a press release, I think the rules are a little stricter.
It's like they pulled a reverse Stalin, how they used to disappear people from photos.
Right.
They actually added people into the photos. Hey, we're all here.
They should have just left Lewis out entirely. Like, he wasn't cooperating.
I would have just put a photo like with all their natural expressions for better and for worse in one.
Yeah.
People can relate to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and the thing is, they've done photos in the past where, like, one of the things I like about this family is that not all the expressions are perfect. Not all the photos are perfect. She takes candid photos of her kids regularly.
Candid is the best.
Some people also pointed out that the foliage behind them does not look current to British climate right now. Okay. So, like, there's a lot going on, Vic.
Live oak sheds its leaves, not in the winter there, boss. That's my JFK impression.
That's what I'm saying.
The foliage there.
So, in the end, an uncharacteristic and rare PR mistake, I think, from the Kate and Will part of the royal family.
This is so crazy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And people have reacted strongly. And I just hope to see her out at Easter looking and happy. And I would be happy.
We did last Easter in England, and it was lovely. I hope they have.
About the foliage. Tell us.
I do. It's accurate, I think. But you know, I hope they go to. We had brunch at the Ivy. I hope they go to the Ivy for brunch. Okay.
Okay.
Mary Catherine, we didn't even get to.
What did we not get to?
The state of the union. All right. We can compress it in the next minutes. People need to know. People need to know anyway. Unless you want to talk more about the photos. Okay.
No. I had to get out there.
Yeah.
That out
okay,
there. But let's
here
do
we
a
go.
State of the Union update. Okay.
Go.
There were a couple things I wanted to note. I guess just briefly, I should ask for your impressions of the State of the Union address.
You first. Okay. Well, okay, fine. I'll go
you
first.
You go first. You go first.
What did I say before the State of the Union? The bar is going to be so low. All he has to do is read the teleprompter, which he did very loudly. And everyone's like, this is amazing. Greatest speech since Gettysburg. The old man yelling is this thing that's happening. And I have to say this, though, no matter who wins in November, you're going to get a lot of old man yelling. So get used to that. But this was not your typical State of the Union speech, which is about what can we accomplish in the coming year? what can we find in common? This is not like George W. Bush giving his shout out to Ted Kennedy over, I think it was Head Start or whatever it was,
right.
or Clinton saying the era of big government is over. No, this is a Democratic pep rally speech. You're going to hear a version of this at the Democratic National Committee in Chicago this summer. And it was really designed to shore up the base. That's right. The purpose of how he has retooled it. And it worked. Not only that, because he has the media on his side. So the descriptions are he's feisty, he's back, he's fiery, it's great. Because to them, this is not like DNC talking points. This is, that's a fact.
This is just truth.
This is just truth. And he's telling the truth. And you see he's awake and everything is great. And anyway, that's my take.
Yeah, my take is very similar. I think it's fair to say by being minimally vigorous by yelling, he exceeded expectations. And I do think the GOP should think about where you set that expectations bar. But the bar is somewhat set just by the fact that we watch him operate regularly and it's not good. So that's the bar that voters have. If 20 minutes late and half coherent is the standard, and yelling inappropriately, then I have been positively presidential at every bachelorette party I have ever attended. So you can vote for me if you wish. You know, not by any stretch of the imagination a good speech.
No.
Just people saying that, I just think, are off their
rockers. But again, a lot of people, including, you know, people we know, friends who we know, who consider themselves to be very down the middle, but of course they're not. They're actually on the left. They're giving us their takes, and they're like, he said all the right things. He was amazing. And I don't know about that.
I would analogize it to when Trump gives a State of the Union and he acts like a semi-sane person for 40 minutes.
Right.
And then people, they're not as nice to Trump as they are to Biden, but people will say like, oh, he kind of did the thing he was supposed to do.
Right.
Right. But that bar is low. That bar is low for him as well. And it doesn't mean the speech is good. I also hate. And this is a norm originally broken by Obama, and it should be a norm not broken in the future. Can we bring this one back where you don't castigate the public servants of the Supreme Court of the United States who show up to your speech as a co-equal and separate part of the United States government?
Yes. This happened, of course.
Let's not do that.
You know, I mean, this started with Obama, with Citizens United, and everybody got so upset. Of all things, they got all upset about Justice Alito's reaction where he nodded and mouthed the words "not true." People were angry at him.
Yeah, that's what you should be mad about.
People were angry at him. And there'd be, you know, Dick Durbin standing behind the court. I remember this. And they're like, and yelling and screaming and clapping. And they're supposed to remain completely still. Like one false move and it's offsides. You know what I mean? One twitch. And now it's become a thing. And of course, Biden did the same thing. He's talking about abortion, of course, because again, he's just trying to shore up his base. So let's go after the Supreme Court for this terrible decision. Also, let's talk about Ukraine, which is definitely important, and they need help, and they need our help and weapons and aid. And then let's equate that to our fighting democracy after January 6th. Okay, wait, hold on. What?
He also equated the current fight for democracy in the U.S. and around the world with fighting Hitler. Like, so he took both the Ukraine fight and J6, smashed them together, and then couched it in these are very serious times, just like the World War II. And it's like, okay, the Ukraine situation is more serious than the J6, but let's not just like slam all these things together. He also, in a part that infuriated me, mentioned the Houthis and an Iran-backed militia that has been allowed to run rampant by his administration, and how he would be devoting more resources to dealing with them and protecting America's troops. But he did not mention, nor did they invite any members of the families of the three National Guards men, women who died in Jordan in a drone attack. Or the two Navy SEALs who died trying to board a vessel manned by these folks. Or just for the third time, the 13 military members who died in Afghanistan withdrawal, one of whose father was in the gallery and yelled at the president. Now, I do not condone a heckling at the State of the Union. However, that man was arrested and charged. A Gold Star father.
He was arrested
and charged for yelling during the State of the Union at a president who has neglected to mention his son.
Yeah.
Who was killed in action.
And probably never will.
Oh, no, I don't think so. And by the way, there was a clip last week of Abby Phillip. Did we talk about this on the show?
Yes, we did.
Interviewing one of these Gold Star moms.
Yes.
I guess it was the mother-in-law.
Shamblin, I believe. Yeah.
Gold Star family members, and saying he's never reached out. This is, like I said, I don't say this very often, but unforgivable. And I hope that this Gold Star father ends up getting let off the hook and that he is, you know, maybe gets a phone call from the president to address the murders at Abbey Gate that the president should feel bad about and should honor the people's service who were involved with it. But, you know, none of that happened from the consoler-in-chief, the empathizer-in-chief, and it ticks me off.
Yeah. Now, hold on now, Mary Catherine. Mm-hmm. Biden did later apologize, the good news. He did apologize. Not to the families of the 13
or any
of the other service men and women who
I dare
killed.
To hope.
No. He apologized for using the word illegal.
Oh, for an alleged murderer?
No, yeah, because, you know, no human is illegal. Although you're either here legally or not legally. But I guess the word illegal is not. So he apologized for that.
Okay. I'm pretty good at understanding that, like, people believe different things than I believe.
Yeah.
And then I can think through why they believe them. And even if I really disagree, I can often understand why they believe them. The worldview that says it's important to apologize in particular to an alleged murderer who crossed the border of our country illegally and then did several illegal things leading up to his arrest for this alleged murder, which was brutal and took the life of an innocent 22-year-old woman in Georgia. It's important to apologize for using the impolite terminology for him, but not to apologize or acknowledge, like, her and her family or these military folks who've given their lives for their country. I don't understand that mindset.
It's they have this obsession with right speak or whatever the term is.
Right.
Right. That's it. Also, the shrinkflation attack on Snickers.
Oh, yes. Wait, okay. Fact checking Snickers. Yes. Hold on. I have to bring this up. Our friend Scott Jennings.
Yeah.
Scott Jennings asked for a statement from Snickers. My husband called this the, you know, like the checkers speech and the day of infamy speech. And my husband called this the air in your chip bag speech.
That's really good.
Because so much of it was dedicated to this idea of shrinkflation, which, of course, has everything to do with inflation caused by Biden policies. But he's going to nail the corporations for it. So he went after Snickers and was like, your Snickers are too small. It's small now. And he's like, Andy Rooney up there. So Scott Jennings, who's a CNN contributor and conservative, truthfully, really, he reaches out and Snickers says, "We have not reduced the size of Snickers singles or share size in the U.S. Like many industries, we continue to face high inflation and spikes in material costs. However, we have worked to absorb those extra costs whenever possible to provide affordable treats and the best value. Final prices are always at the discretion of the retailer, but we make every effort to minimize costs to provide a full range of delicious products."
You know what I think, Mary Catherine? I think somebody told him that he was going to be given one of those king size bars, and then they secretly gave him the fun size.
Yeah.
Just the small one. The ones that they give you, or even worse, you ever get the one that's half? It's just a square. Yeah. Don't tease me
square,
like that.
Yeah.
No.
He was mad about his fun size. Yeah. Okay.
It was nutrageous, shall I say.
I have to say one last thing.
Please.
Because people accuse us of bias if we do not.
Oh.
There was another unimpressive speech on the night of the State of the Union.
Okay.
And it was from Senator Katie Britt, who I like very much. And I understand what they were going for. They wanted a relatable mom. Yeah. She looks like a relatable mom.
Yeah.
She is this beautiful 40-something mom. She's in her kitchen at home in her home state of Alabama. She's a young senator. Like, I get what's going on here. And in her normal voice, she's lovely and relatable.
Yeah.
But I don't know who did the coaching or what the plan was, but it was just too emotive. It was trying to be too many things. The delivery was very strange.
Mm-hmm.
And just she and Biden, if they had both come down 2.5 notches.
Notches, yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
Everything would have been better. But The nice thing is that in the era of memes, she can't be memed that easily without sound because she looks so great that every screenshot of her just looks
right. She can't. Gesture.
That's a real pretty lady. That's
right. Right. It might be better without the sound. So,
but she was parodied by SNL in the cold open. On one hand, you are parodied in the cold open of SNL. On the other hand, guess who they had to bring in to play you? Scarlett Johansson.
Wow.
I mean, that's like a little bit of a win, right?
Yeah, no, I'll take that. I would take that. Even if it's, you know, bad. No, you know, no response to the State of the Union has ever been great or memorable.
It's very hard.
The one, I'll tell you one I really loved many years ago is from Fred Thompson. He basically treated it as a movie role.
As
it was
should.
Like, it was like watching Law and Order or something. And he just, you know, gives his thing. And then, and I thought, oh, this guy would be great for president. But
you know whose was also pretty decent, actually, was Governor Bob McDonnell, Republican of Virginia. And this is, look, I will never have the misfortune to have to give this speech, but I'm a person who gives speeches and I understand how they work. And this is the thing that I would request.
Right.
I would insist upon a live audience.
Yeah.
Because you cannot go up against the pomp and circumstance of a joint session of Congress and do it straight to camera, quiet, calm. Right. It just feels like such an awful contrast.
Yeah.
And it doesn't do anyone any favors. So I would do that. But the best you can do is just be like basically inoffensive.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's
I don't think
the
there's
best.
Really a win.
That's the best. I think the one thing I would have changed also in Senator Britt's response, if she wanted to be more relatable, is not only do it in the kitchen, but have like your husband in the back there making a sandwich.
I know, like moving around the back.
Yeah, moving around, looking at the cupboard and, you know, checking things out. Is this still good? You know? Okay.
You're trying to wave him off in the back.
That's it. That's it. Yeah.
Can I say one more thing?
Please, Mary Catherine.
A lot of people, and look, this is probably a rake the GOP didn't have to step on, but a lot of people are mad about that it's in a kitchen. Like, here's a lady in a kitchen.
Oh.
Okay. Guys, this is 2024. A very nice, spacious, suburban kitchen is not a symbol of oppression to women. It is, in fact, aspirational.
Yeah.
Every single piece of content that a suburban 40-something mom puts on the internet is, if at all possible, in her spacious suburban kitchen.
Yeah.
And that's where she does a lot of hanging out with her family, a lot of making good memories. Like, I just lay off the kitchen. The kitchen's not the problem.
The kitchen is my problem. Kate will tell you this. I have what she calls, I suffer from island envy.
Oh, gosh. Neither you nor I have a spacious suburban kitchen.
No, there's just enough room for me to do my thing. Everyone get out.
I can barely make a French 75 in there.
Oh, Mary Catherine, I hope you're having a wonderful time in Israel while our listeners are listening to this.
I will keep you guys updated, and I'll have a show from there of some kind.
Wonderful.
All right.
That wraps up this episode of Getting Hammered. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. You could follow me on Twitter at Victorina Mattis.
I am at MK Hammer on Twitter, at MK Hammer Time on Instagram. You can follow the show at Getting Hammered Podcast on YouTube and Instagram, and you should. Thanks for getting hammered responsibly. This has been a Nebulous Media Podcast.